Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Spencer Korg Williams.
Hey, how's it going?
That was probably your better Taika Waititi impression, so... speaking of which, we are also including into the conversation intern slash stenographer slash part-timer slash coffee bringer who brings no coffee, Amy.
I brought my own coffee today.
He did. And it's a ceramic mug that comes with a cap. That's actually pretty cool.
That's something different.
Oh, never mind. Amy, you're with us.
Yeah. We are here.
And she is feeling as normal as ever. We got a great show in store for you as we are going to be talking about the recently dropped MCU film in the Phase 4 saga, and that is Thor: Love and Thunder. So stick around as we dive into that. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite stream platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out on the website. We got over 300 episodes, allegedly. Everything ranging from action to anime to romance to comedy to conversations about the industry. We got it. If you're looking for it, we got it. Check us out at our website, filmlosophers.com. Also, check us out on the socials, check us out on the podcast streaming apps, because that's more important right here. Check us out anywhere on iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, TuneIn. You can tune in to each and every one of those places. Find us on the streaming apps. Follow us, subscribe to us, listen to us. Hey, if you're feeling gracious, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it. We've worked hard. We've been doing this for many years, and we love doing it. But hey, a little recognition isn't, you know, something too much to ask for.
So. Nope.
Also check us out on the socials. As I stated earlier, we're on Facebook, Instagram, and on Twitter at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. Remember, it's filmlosophy101. Check us out there. We got great stuff in store. But before we dive into our review for tonight, I cannot talk because we're excited to talk about our movie. But I'm also excited because Spencer's big score is back, and he's got some great things to share with us. So, Spencer, tell us what's the big score this week.
All right. Today, we are meeting a movie that had both Rosie O'Donnell and NSYNC involved. Anyone have any idea on what soundtrack?
I have no idea. I'm trying to keep clear because this is Spencer's moment. Although Little Miss Normal over there trying to, you know.
I think it is, but I had to think about it for a bit. I'm going to say Tarzan.
You're right.
Yes.
So we're talking about the 1999 Tarzan, which was helmed by Phil Collins.
Yes.
They gave him a whole movie just like... Go crazy.
Have fun.
Do the sing-song thing with the drums.
Yeah, so the first track is just the opening track to the movie, Two Worlds. This song, I think, got me into drums as a child.
Really?
Because, like, it's just heavy drums, like, when you start off. And, like, my mom actually bought the soundtrack to this movie, so I've had it, and... you know, this is one of the ones I was listening to along with the other two that are on the soundtrack. And it just gets you ready for an adventure. Like, you're ready to go once you hear those drums come in. They're the drums of adventure.
That's actually really cool.
So the second one is Son of Man, which...
Keep going. Sorry. I'm with you on this. I'm really excited. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's cool. Son of Man is I believe, like, it's been a while since I've seen Tarzan, but I remember just, like, that song playing and Tarzan doing, like, that whole surfing tree thing, which would just tear up your feet in real life. But it was so cool just watching him hop from tree to tree. Mm-hmm. And, like, again, this is another one where, like, you know, upbeat pace, Phil Collins brings it, like, really hard. And it was just, like, a really fun one to listen to. So, another one of my favorite tracks from this one. Okay, last one. This one is more because I find it comedic. But the song Trashing the Camp, there are two versions of this song on the soundtrack. There's one with Rosie O'Donnell in, like, because she was a character in the movie, so she's in this song. They don't have her doing a lot because, like, Rosie O'Donnell's not, like, maybe unless she has a secret history of, like, music that I'm unaware of. But, like, she's not the first person I'd be like, oh, yes, the illustrious singer Rosie O'Donnell. But there is a different version with Phil Collins and NSYNC, and where they do the same exact song, just, like, with different, like, instruments and just them NSYNC harmonizing with Phil Collins. They sound great, and, like, I still like listening to it. I also remember, like, I guess it must have been on, like, a DVD or something, but there was some extra, like, information where it was NSYNC was talking, and, like, they were talking about, like, oh, you know, like, it's like a real, like, street song and blah, blah, blah.
Street song.
I don't know. It's probably still on YouTube, but, like, it also, that like, little recording had, like, the most aggressive 90s, like, you know, like, zoom-ins and, like, grayscale and all that stuff.
That's scary.
It was the 90s. It was a time. It was a mood.
I think they mean to say, like, one of those, like, when those guys used to stand around, like, the burning garbage can and, like, sing doo-wops. I can only think of that from, like, Rocky. That's the only thing I think of, like.
Yeah, that's a bygone
doo,
time.
Doo, 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 doo.
Yeah, when's the last time you've seen your singing garbage can people?
On Sesame Street.
We got a yeah, there you go. So.
Yeah. So, like, it's just crazy to me that, like, you can tie together and sync Rosie O'Donnell and Phil Collins, but here we are. And that really concludes Spencer's Big Score for this week.
There you go. And of course, you can catch more of Spencer's Big Score over at our Instagram page when we post all of those things. We'll get to it. We'll get to it, Spencer.
It'll happen.
It'll happen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was Spencer's Big Score. And of course, we have our other segment that appears throughout the month, Jane on Scene, which we'll get to those hopefully later this month.
Hopefully.
But that brings us to our conversation of the hour, and that is the roundtable discussion of MCU's Phase 4 film, Thor: Love and Thunder.
Yes.
This movie has been talked about for a good amount of time, and to be quite frank, I mean, I know we usually say that all the time for just about every one of the Marvel films and whatnot, but this movie had, like, the weirdest marketing campaign. It had the oddest, like, trail up, and it even has a little bit of controversy with it, which we will talk about. But this movie has been seen by us three, and we are excited to talk about it. So before we dive in any more, Spencer, give them official synopsis goodness.
Thor embarks on a journey unlike anything he's ever faced, a quest for inner peace. However, his retirement gets interrupted by Gore the God Butcher, a galactic killer who seeks the extinction of the gods. To combat the threat, Thor enlists the help of King Valkyrie, Korg, and ex-girlfriend Jane Foster, who, to his surprise, inexplicably wields his magical hammer. Together, they set out on a harrowing cosmic adventure to uncover the mystery of the God Butcher's vengeance.
Directed by Taika Waititi, the film stars Chris Hemsworth as Thor, alongside Christian Bale, Tessa Thompson, Jamie Alexander, Taika Waititi, Russell Crowe, and Natalie Portman, as well as several other folks that do appearances and cameos. A little bit of information, Christian Bale had initially turned down the possibility of appearing in any more comic book or superhero films, after 2012's The Dark Knight Rises. Seeing the genre as uninteresting from an acting perspective, and especially finding the experience of donning the Batman costume to be a miserable one, he agreed to take part in this film, however, after his kid begged him to take the role.
Makes sense.
I mean, we worry about kids, you know, running the world in the future one day, and let's just be frank, they're already running the world today.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're already making actors who swear off of playing certain movies play actually those type of movies, we just need that one kid who's like the son of the president to be like, "Oh, but Dad, I don't want to have broccoli at lunch anymore. Can't you just like sign an executive order and ban all broccoli?" And then poof, there you go.
But I like broccoli.
Well, you're not the president's kid, so...
Thankfully.
Yeah, that'd obviously.
Be uncomfortable.
What?
Keep going.
So either way, he ended up taking the role, whether it was from his kid or whatnot, so... another tidbit about the movie. This is actually... Thor is the only MCU character to have 4 standalone movies.
For get now. It.
Well, I mean, the only other person that's left is, like, old and no longer active. What is it? Steve Rogers and the Geriatric Chronicles in the, you know, in the senior citizens home. Like, I don't know if there's not much you can do.
Hey, you never know. Captain America and the Citizens Brigade.
This is Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy written all over it. Like, I can see it now. One last tidbit. Chris Hemsworth, on his 8th time playing the character of Thor, achieved his biggest physique ever for this film, getting up to 231 pounds for the role. His longtime trainer, Luke said, "He is in phenomenal nick. He's the biggest he's ever been. He's the heaviest he's ever been. This extent of musculature required Hemsworth to eat at least 8 times a day during the entire duration of filming just to maintain all the muscle mass he had acquired." I had thrown it in there because Spencer and another friend of the show, Tyler, that you guys may have heard, are big, you know, workout, you know, buffs, and so this would have been an interesting fact.
I mean, yeah, it is interesting. Like 8 times a day. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you have to eat 8 times a day, and he's probably not like snacking eating. He's probably like eating, like full on chicken breasts and protein, and you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's insane. But he was pretty yoked for that movie.
Yeah, it's like interesting looking at older pictures of Chris Hemsworth because he looks so skinny. Like,
really?
Even in like earlier Thors, he doesn't look like he does now.
No, not at all. Yeah. He's super small in that first Thor movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because like, I don't know if you ever... So to take the long road to where I'm getting to, have you guys seen Tropic Thunder?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you remember what Robert Downey Jr. tells Ben Stiller about him being buff and built? How he looks like Rambo, but not Rambo from the first Rambo, but Rambo from the second one when he's super buff and whatnot, which he is because in the first one, it's not about, you know, John Rambo being
buff.
It's, you know, his story. The second one is him, you know, out in the field and he's like yoked. It's so I say all that to say this is one of those movies where much like how a lot of this movie is, you know, circumferencing the whole mentality of 80s nostalgia and tropes, that kind of hit me as like, okay, well, maybe he's doing a whole Rambo 2 type thing. Seeing as Robert Downey Jr. has a role in this MCU, I know it's a stretch, but I'm just saying we're not going to see, you know, RDJ in blackface anytime soon. Let's just say that. But what I am saying is, you know, it's an interesting connection. Like I said, we saw this movie this past weekend. We all got a chance to see it. Spencer, did you see it in theater or at the drive-in?
I saw it in theater.
He's growing up. for the longest, if you've been listening to this show, you've known Spencer has this love affair with the drive-in and not getting sick. So
yeah, just getting sick sucks.
So we all got a chance to see it, and there's a lot of conversation about this movie, both about the film and about the making of the film. And we're going to talk about those things as well, because it's become such a large enough voice and conversation, you know, focus that I think we should bring it here and talk about it. But before we do, I want to talk about your guys' experience. Now, so far what are we in? 2, 4, what is it, like 14, 15 years already into the MCU?
Shoot.
Because 2008,
yeah,
my 20, with
22.
Yeah,
14.
So, I mean, and
that's seven. What? I'm sorry. What?
14. Oh. And that's
not say 17.
No, that's also to say that we're not counting now that they're a part of the new, you know, Disney Mafia, all of the Fox properties as well, no, which would go back to 2000, yeah, with the first X-Men. I mean, if we wanted to go even further back,
no,
we could go to the first Blade movie and go that far. I don't know the year on that one, but I'm okay. but either way, we have been in this sea of comic book adaptations for some time now. And I want your guys' honest opinion on this. Are you guys actually having the expectation of seeing something brand new when you guys see Marvel films nowadays? Because it seems like we're kind of in that vein of seeing the adaptation after adaptation after adaptation with movies that we're seeing with characters we've already had the origin story for. I mean, we have Wakanda Forever coming up, and obviously, unfortunately, we won't have Chadwick Boseman to reprise his great role as Black Panther. Mm-hmm. But we are getting other movies that are going to continue the story for other heroes. And do you guys have this sense of expectation for the things that we see now to see something brand new, or are you guys going in expecting to see some adaptation of a comic you've already seen or read or heard about?
Oh, okay. So for me, the movies, I'm not really expecting something new from them. I actually have gotten to the point where I expect something new and creative from their television properties versus the movies.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting place for them to be in. Mostly because out of the two properties, recently they've been more willing to take chances on the television shows versus the movies.
To an extent. Yeah, I mean,
because I feel like WandaVision and Loki, like, are both...
Those were really interesting. those were actually more akin to the... I mean, they pulled from, like, comic book moments, but the story itself was brand new, to be perfectly frank. Mm-hmm. WandaVision was kind of leading towards the mindset of House of M, but it only pulled like some big moments out of that without it sticking the landing of House of M with what everybody was expecting. But it still had a lot of great heart to it. Like, honestly, I love that line that Vision gives to Wanda when they're sitting in that room and she just lost her brother, and he goes, "Grieving is only celebrating love lost," or something like that.
Yeah, what is grief but not love persevering? Something like that.
Yeah, grief is love persevering. Yeah.
That's
right.
Because it was that good.
it was a good line. And you had great actors in it, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had Paul Bettany is just a joy. Yeah. You know, it's sad we haven't seen him as of late, but he is wonderful. But when it comes to the movies, because you make a great point, the shows are something unique and original to an extent. The movies, however, I don't... Personally, I don't know if I can subscribe to the idea of expecting something brand spanking new when it comes to a lot of these stories. Shang-Chi, we half expected the direction for it to go. A lot of people called it, and it hit it right on the head. When it came to Infinity War, everybody who has read a comic, everybody who has read the Infinity Saga, the omnibus, if you've read that, like, you know how that ends, you know. And there was no disappointment on that. It did it very well, but the expectation was already there. Like, I know Thanos is going to snap his fingers and half the universe's population is going to go. You knew that was going to happen. But Amy, what about you? What do you think in terms of you being one of the more nuanced comic book geniuses that we here have on the show?
I'm not a genius.
Okay, I'm
by
sorry.
Any
that was not. That was too much.
Reel it back.
Comic book reader.
There you go. A little more.
But no, you're more aware of a lot of this. Mm-hmm. Do you actually go into these movies now with an expectation of seeing something brand new?
Yes and no. I feel, especially we're going to get into the conversation about how this is not the it simultaneously follows and doesn't follow comic book storylines, character arcs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Overall, I do agree with Spencer that they've taken a lot more risks in storytelling via their TV properties because probably it's cheaper for them to see how it works.
But even then, that's not in every single situation. Like, for instance, the Hawkeye series. Mm-hmm. You were actually calling a lot of what was going on in there. And yeah. you because you were the one that I remember being the most vocal about it, that I knew about all the little things from, like, the comic books to the covers that they were doing, the little mm-hmm. swatches that they were transitioning through, the certain beats. Like, you were seeing them come down the pipeline. That didn't seem very, like, it didn't feel like you had an expectation of seeing something new. You were already seeing what was going to happen in the next episode.
Yeah, and that in part was because the writing for that particular story is hands down some of the best Hawkeye writing that's available. Matt Fraction, of course, writing the original Hawkeye book where Kate Bishop teams up with Clint. But when you get into things like Spider-Man No Way Home and even Shang-Chi, where Shang-Chi followed some similar beats, but it was handled in such a way that it felt fresh. I think when it comes to me being a longtime comic book reader, I cannot rail against seeing moments and capturing things that I've experienced in one medium transitioning to another and go, oh, this was terrible. It was so much better than the comic book. It also brings an opportunity with the movie MCU in particular, for people that haven't read the books or people that don't know about these characters to get them excited. And in turn, it inspires them to go back and read comic books.
Yeah.
Where they find not everything that was in the movie happened in the comic book and vice versa. So for me, I have kind of a mixed emotion about expectations because I love being able to go, that's a panel. And in this movie, it happened quite a bit. And in some other things, it happened quite a bit as well. But I also like being surprised and pleasantly surprised. And I think when we get into our review of this, you'll see a lot more of maybe that for me.
I think for me, because of the fact, when it comes to movies, you can kind of dictate trends and tropes and even in successful movies, mm-hmm. you know, even successful films can have certain levels of expectation where you can predict the trajectory of a character's arc by what it's wanting the viewer to know. Like, if I want you to know, I'm doing the whole, you know, hero's quest, you know, there's going to be a semi-large battle, there's going to be a really strong failure, you're going to see the build back up to the stronger victory, and then, like, the hero's journey. Everyone knows that, you know, that's kind of, you know, filming 101, like screenwriting 101, whatever you want to call it, 101. Character building 101. Mm-hmm. That's what you would expect when you would see something like that. If you were a filmmaker who is wanting the audience to see, you know, to have this blind faith and trust in someone so that they can rip the carpet underneath you, you know those steps. You know how they're going to pursue that character makeup and how they're going to be presented in the film. A great example that comes to mind is like The Usual Suspects. Mm. You know, that movie has the epitome of the idea of creating this false sense of security with a character where you find yourself at the end totally blown away that you're like, oh my gosh, this person whom we've been fearing this entire time has literally been in the same exact room with us the entire time. Mm. You know, it's that type of smart story writing and character building that give it, but you recognize those beats because of the great times like that. I think for me, Marvel is, like Spencer said, Marvel is wowing me more so in their consistency to try to create stronger left or right turns or pivots in their TV series than really in their movies. And mind you, yeah, their movies are very few and far between. Not very few, but somewhat far between.
Are you talking about like in release schedule? Or?
Yeah, in release schedule.
Oh.
Somewhat. Because like with with series like WandaVision or Falcon and the Winter Soldier or Loki,
Miss Marvel.
We're getting it weekly, you know, just like regular TV, which you had a big complaint about that last time, which is funny, about the release schedule. It's like, man, I just wish everything would just drop and I could just watch it all, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, you were like, yeah, I'm glad now they released it every week.
Yeah, so, like, from a consumer, perspective, no, I still want, like, the massive drop. But from, like, a business perspective, that makes no sense and they shouldn't do it.
I'm just saying, if you're going to take examples or you're going to take, like, leading from Netflix, who's literally bombing still in their numbers, maybe you should take the other route for right now.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, because the problem with, like, just dumping it all at once is, like, if you care, you have to go at, like, the pace everyone mm-hmm. else is,
yeah,
or you're going to just run into a spoiler.
True.
Is Vecna.
Or, what?
okay.
This is turning into a century moment.
Nice.
I think when it comes to the movies, I have a sense of hesitancy in terms of expecting something new. Now, that doesn't mean, and let me preface this, this does not mean I still don't expect something good or great.
Mm. Yeah.
That's a totally different thing. Just because the expectation of what I'm going to see is this may not be something brand spanking new or a fresh new idea does not mean that their interpretation of this particular script or film is not going to be like incredibly well executed, you know, and that very well may be the case. So I want to preface that just because there are certain movies where I'm like, okay, well, this does seem a bit predictable in terms of the story arc for this character or what's going on here. That doesn't mean I still didn't enjoy myself, you know? So I say all that. Any last thoughts before we dive into this review?
Dive into the review.
Okay, diving in. First impressions of the film as soon as you left the theater. Let's start with Amy.
Aww. Oh, wait. After I left the film. Sorry. When the film ended,
oh my God,
my brain went, aww. And then we went through credits and, you know, scenes within those. I called one of them. I felt very proud of myself. And I went, this is good. Thank you, Taika.
Which goes to what I was saying about having the expectation not being surprised. What about you, Spencer?
A little bit of confusion. That is Marvel's fault. Mm. This is more in the what is real and what is a joke realm. Huh. Because just things that happened earlier in the movie, like, reference things that happened in other media. And if you would have asked me before this movie, it's like, hey, do you think this actually happened? I would have been like, no. And then Marvel comes in, it's like, well, actually, no, it did happen.
Are you referring to, like, the thing about, like, Daryl and
yeah,
all that?
Yeah, I'm referring to Daryl. Because, like a lot of stuff that happened in that thing, like, just threw me off. And so, like, when Marvel comes in and, like, tries to course correct, I get confused. Because as a person who is not a comic book reader of Thor, like, mm-hmm. I get all my information from Marvel on the movies. So when Marvel is, like, for instance, confusing about what Thor's name actually is,
he's got a couple.
Yeah, like, it becomes confusing when, like, you know, well, Thor's not a name, it's a title, and, like, mm-hmm. when the movies that came previously don't do the best job of explaining that, mm-hmm. I get confused when, like, no, they're like, no, Jane is Thor now and you've lost your name or something. Like,
well, technically, so Chris Hemsworth, when he becomes unworthy, becomes Odinson.
Yes.
His full name is Thor Odinson.
Odinson.
Yeah, but the problem is the first time you see that is in that Daryl thing, and that comes across as a joke.
Oh,
and
I'm
not
sorry.
A real thing.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Did you spend a lot of time watching those shorts?
No. Like, I saw it once, and then, like, it started having, like, actual effects, and I'm like, what is going on?
Well, there you go. Anything else really quick before we
The only other thing I probably would mention is I have no idea how they gave so much personality to an axe that has no facial expressions.
Yeah.
But, like, Stormbreaker is my MVP of this movie.
There you go. first impressions right out the gate, I thought the movie was good. Mm-hmm. I liked a lot of the elements. I thought there were several elements that were very cute, very fun to watch, very, very cool ideas. I don't know if I left the movie feeling like it was great. I feel like it was a good movie. Mm-hmm. I definitely feel like it's in the top tier or the top better half of the four Thor movies.
Okay, but like that's such a low bar.
Yeah, well,
because all it had to really compete with was Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Spencer, if I asked you to give me four drawings and the first two looked like a three-year-old drew it and the second two actually looked really good, I would say, hey, you did really well in the second half. Like you're 50% great. The other half, you should probably put your diaper back on. Like, honestly, that's where I see this. Like, you have to, unfortunately, with these movies, with any movie, any particular film, you have to look at the sum of its parts.
Right.
Because if not, you're cheating not only yourself, but everybody who listens to you out of an honest and true review. Because if I just looked at Thor and be like, oh my God, the Thor movies are so great. Oh my God, Ragnarok, mind-blowing. And then this movie, oh, it's so good. You should watch it, blah, blah, blah. And then I end it like that. And they're like, oh, they said the Thor movies are great. Let's go watch part one.
No, let's go watch part two.
Let's go watch part two.
Part two is currently available and not part one. I get, well, part two is probably good too. We should just watch that since all the Thor movies are good. Remember that problem? Jurassic Park. What one was it?
Jurassic Park 3.
Ellen. So I don't know. I have to keep that in mind. Like, and mind you, what Taika has done with the Thor franchise, and I call it that particular franchise with those properties, is the same thing that James Gunn did when he came in for the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
You know, he came in, he shook it up, gave it a little bit of personality, didn't make it so focused on being serious, made it actually look like the people in the movie were having fun, and then went with it, you know? And it looks like everybody had a fun time on both films, like Thor, Ragnarok, and this one. So Thor, Love, and Thunder. The same thing with the Suicide Squad and Suicide Squad. The first one looks like it was a hodgepodge mess, and it was pre-slap Will Smith. The follow-up movie is a different, almost an entirely different cast and crew.
It's a delight,
but it's fun and it's, you know, it's interesting and it's engaging and it's hilarious at times, funny at others, dark humor at some. You have rats that are cute. You have a shark who doesn't know how to be socially acceptable. It was a delight. Polka Dot Man. And then,
Polka Dot Man.
So I don't want to make it seem like this movie is not great to the standards of the first two, but in the same concept, in the same conversation, I also have to, reflect it off of Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. Coming out of first impressions, let's go ahead and talk about the performances. We get Amy with her bug eyes looking over here. You okay over there?
I'm just really excited.
Oh, okay. Spoilish? So this is going to be a spoiler-filled review. We honestly can't really do this review without spoilers, just because I don't want to.
I don't want to.
So this is your warning, first, last, and only line of defense against the worst in the universe. This is your warning for spoilers. So with that said, let's go ahead and jump right into some of the character acting and some of the performers. Now, obviously, we get Chris Hemsworth comes back as this bluesy kind of Thor who's sad and a little bit kind of figuring himself out in the beginning. That whole opening. So just talking about Chris Hemsworth right now, there was so much 80s energy coming off of that man in this movie that it was like every single part of this movie had some callback to 80s nostalgia. Whether if it was the opening scene where he's fighting and he ends up doing the splits at one point in time, aka the Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah.
Or he's on a magic boat being pulled by his goats.
His screaming goats and his axe.
Temperamental axe.
All with a cocktails sign.
Cocktails and dreams.
Cocktails and dreams sign, neon sign lit up on the boat itself. So I feel like Chris Hemsworth really looked like he had a blast doing this role. It's funny how everybody kind of talks about his physique in the movie and like how nobody could compare. Chris Pratt had gone on the record saying that, you know, everybody was in awe of his, you know, of his physique. And I believe Christian Bale talked to some interviewer recently and said that there was no like competition whatsoever, that Chris Hemsworth definitively like out-muscled Gore the God Butcher in this movie.
That's understandable once you saw him.
But I feel like he did a really great job embodying his character. He's I feel like Chris Hemsworth is really owning the kind of lunky blockhead-esque type musclehead, if you will, role, which, to be frank, that's kind of who Thor is in the comics for the most part. But I feel like in the first two movies, it lent itself to be more serious than that. Like, if it was supposed to be some kind of Shakespearean play.
Mm-hmm. That's because, like, even freaking Iron Man said it, like, are we doing Shakespeare in the Park?
Yeah.
Because of the way that, like, Thor used to talk.
Yeah.
Like, it was very Shakespearean, and now he has a much more natural, like, language about him.
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like he's coming more into his own as the character. I feel like we're getting a lot more of a relaxed form of Thor. And I don't say relaxed as in like he's saying bro and dude or what all that, but it doesn't feel like he's taking himself too seriously as a character. And maybe that's because of Taika and the writing team that he has, or maybe it's Chris and his, you know, evolution for the character itself. But either way, I'm really liking the direction Chris Hemsworth is taking this character. Were there any highlights for you guys?
I want to go back to Chris Hemsworth real quick.
Okay.
Because, like, I just super agree with you. I feel like the direction that Thor has just gone in like Ragnarok since,
yeah,
has just been tremendously such an improvement.
Yeah.
He's like most improved player.
Yeah, exactly. MVP.
And then I will again shout out Stormbreaker as my favorite character in this movie. the fact that there's no, like, actual actor. But I think... person I probably want to shout out is Natalie Portman, because, like, I will be the first on record to be like, I have a hard time remembering what happened in, like, the first and second Thor. First one, I, like, kind of, you know, I can tell you the basic idea.
Yeah.
Second one, I have no idea what happened in that movie.
I don't remember.
Like, something about it. Like, floating trucks. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, like, so, like, her coming back to the series, I was like, I wonder how she's evolved since the last time we've seen her.
I was looking for the tattoo she got in Vegas in the What If movie. I was like, it's gotta be here somewhere. It's gotta be.
But, no, I really, like Jane Foster now. And I kind of like how, like, this movie goes over, like, you know, what the relationship was like. And it makes a lot more sense to me here than it did before. And I just, like, appreciate, you know, like, what Natalie Portman brought into this.
Yeah, yeah. That's a lot of really good points you make. Because the whole effort of whoever was going to play Jane Foster in any of this, the storylines that came about, even when the movies were still being, you know, produced and whatnot, especially the one that this movie is based off of, The Mighty Thor... it led to a lot of really real and raw places in the comics, in the comic books. And everybody had it on their head, like, whether or not this was going to follow suit or if it was going to be something entirely new and original, just taking bits and pieces from the comic. And like we said, spoiler alert. So, but this movie does pull from the Mighty Thor's arc for Jane Foster. And it gets real at times. And I have to say, Natalie Portman's portrayal of her character kind of having this magic, you know, this magic tool that makes her feel great, but at the same time is not helping her at all when she, you know, detaches herself from it. It is such a real world mental concept for a lot of people in terms of, you know, how they perceive, you know, where their own health, their mental well-being, their spiritual, emotional well-being, in terms of like, maybe there's this one thing when they're using it or when they're doing it that they feel great and untouchable and, you know, indefeatable, you know, and they're, you know, whether if it's whatever it may be, it could be a vice, it could be anything like that. But there's something that people have when they hold on to it that they feel like they're on top of the world. And then when they separate themselves from it or when they finally come down from that and they feel worse than they did the day before, there's a lot of realistic parallelism that is in there that I just applaud Natalie Portman for taking those efforts to creating those moments, because it's as much as this was a fun and, you know, outlandish type movie with screaming goats.
Not a screaming goats.
I feel like some of the real parts in the most Taika way that Taika Waititi does, he takes those moments and makes them bigger than what they are. And if you ever want to see an example of that, watch the movie Jojo Rabbit. Mm-hmm. Jojo Rabbit is a beautiful movie that has a lot of laughter, a lot of fun, but it also has a lot of realistic emotional moments. Mm-hmm. And it takes you by surprise at times at how hard it hits your heart without you even being aware that it just hits your heart. You know, from a glimpse of a shoe to like the fall of the Third Reich, like all these things.
Don't even bring up that damn shoe.
But Taika does that really well. And when you have the right people, like that little boy who played in Jojo Rabbit, mm-hmm. phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Alfie, whatever his name is, absolutely superb. And in this case, Natalie Portman, incredibly earnest and wonderful and raw in that ability to not know how to properly tell somebody that you have cancer in the most introverted way of saying it.
Yep.
Without, you know, without it being too hilarious to where it's like you're not taking the scene seriously, but making it so relatable that everybody who knows exactly mm-hmm. the place where that person is at,
yep.
completely connects. And so I to just piggyback on Spencer, I have to give her those props, because I know watching those scenes with her throughout the entire film, they had so much just pure emotional connection mm-hmm. with the audience. And that is only due because of the great performance by Natalie Portman. So
like that scene where she does tell Thor she has cancer, like I did laugh because I was like, I would be exactly the same.
Oh yeah, we would all definitely.
Okay, bye. Like I was like, yes, we do this together. Yes.
What about you, Ames? Any performances that you want to talk about?
Oh heck yes, but I do want to give props again. One more for Natalie Portman. Watching her evolution in the character balance so lovingly and so with such reverence. She plays both sides of Jane, not only the desperation, but the exuberance to even temporarily find something to make her whole again, to make her feel healthy, and her trying to find a catchphrase, like, or a tagline.
Yeah.
And it's, even at the end of the movie, it's still kind of part of that running joke to the spirit of who Jane was. It's really just a delight to see that evolution across the page translated so seamlessly onto the screen. And then it's Natalie adding extra Natalie, which was just wonderful. I'm going to bring up two, because one of them I would...
Better not be the goats.
No, it's not the goats. Just so much screaming. So much screaming. No, the first one I want to bring up, because their name was on my lips a lot, that I was like, oh, dang. Oh, dang. Christian Flippin' Bale.
Mm. Yeah.
Start to finish. This man not only looked the part, but it was so breathtakingly moving. There were spaces of such delirium and psychosis and sheer madness. he was stylized brilliantly. Like, not only his outfit and his makeup, but just he embodied everything that teetered on that desperation and revenge. Yeah. He felt as big of a menace, as large as Chris Hemsworth was body-wise, he felt as large or larger as a villain. Mm-hmm. And that was something that, like, you needed that gravity.
Yeah.
Especially for the character, because when you see him on page, Gore's not the prettiest person to look at. And Christian Bale, by no means, at this part in his... The man is method in the way he just... Mm-hmm. He is gaunt and scary to look at. But he brings such a great just malice that it's hard to describe, because it's something you want to experience.
Yeah.
And I just remember going, oh my gosh, this is done so flipping well. Oh my gosh. Yeah, Christian Bale. Oh, dang. And then lastly for me, not the goat still. Sorry, goats. well, technically I could bring up two, but I'll bring up one and then I'll talk about the other one later. Taika as Korg. I thought I was going to be like, no more Korg, man. I can't do it. And initially, when we kind of had him in the background, I was like, okay. And he's creating the points in the story to give you almost like an act one, act two, and act three.
Giving you that exposition. And mind you, in a very 80s way, which beyond Thunderdome, Mad Max does that exact same thing in the beginning. So it's definitely mirroring that if you've seen that.
Well, I haven't, but I thought it was going to drive me nuts, and it became more and more endearing the longer it went on. And then being able to see Taika actually let Korg grow as a character was something that was really wonderful to see. We got background, we got origin. Like, it was a delight. We got some of the same things from, in a lesser way, Tessa Thompson as King Valkyrie. We saw little bits of it. But Korg had such a great, like, a movement through this arc that didn't exist. And it's, I believe, a lot of what just Taika brings to the table in regards to the heart that he has for the characters that he chooses to portray. And if I'm going to be honest, I'm going to kind of cheat one more in there just for giggles. No, still not the goats, though they were nuts. I want to give a shout out to the kids, actually. Mm. The collection of children in this, regardless of who their famous parents were and were not. It was so much fun to see the sequence I'm thinking of in particular, right at the end. Spencer, you know what I'm saying. It was such an unexpected fun turn that all of these kids just, it looked like they had the best day on set. Like, everybody was living it up. Especially Astrid Axel Heimdall's kid. He was so, like, I'm like, oh dude, I like you. Mm-hmm. Like, I really like you.
Yeah.
But yeah, these kids were awesome.
And that talks about, in terms of story and so forth, you know, the story element of this movie has really great moments and ebbs and flows. Taika Waititi puts in all these efforts to create moments of brevity and moments of joy, coupled with moments of seriousness and so forth. And it there's no doubt that on the story side of things, there's like top perfection for this film. But like I did mention, there was a level of controversy pertaining to this movie as well as other MCU films. And I don't know if anybody is aware, or if everybody here is at this table is aware. There's been rumblings regarding to VFX creators having a really hard time, almost impossible time, working with Marvel. In their films and in their, you know, effects departments, some even saying to the effect that they would never want to work with the Marvel team again. Mm-hmm. A lot of these conversation pieces, a lot of these thoughts and whatnot are stemming from not only an article that came out from Endgamer, but also from a few Reddit strings of posts and so forth that have talked about the individuals who worked with Marvel and have given their thoughts on, you know, why they will never want to work with this particular organization again. Mm-hmm. Spencer, are you aware of any of this?
I wasn't until today, but it was something I was actually thinking about, like, not too long ago, because, like, I believe next year they're supposed to be doing, like, 4 movies for the whole year, and I'm like, how?
Yeah.
Because I was like, how are you getting all these things put out this fast? Because, like, this year it's got 3 movies, but you've also got multiple series. Like, that's a lot of, like, VFX artists. Like, how are you getting this all done? And apparently the answer is not entirely well.
not entirely, maybe in the best interest of the creators themselves. There's a few folks who have mentioned, like, someone on Reddit posted saying, Marvel is probably the worst methodology of production and VFX management out there, they wrote. They can never fix the look for the show before more than half the allocated time for the show is over. The artists working on Marvel shows are definitely not paid equivalent to the amount of work they put in.
I believe it.
Others replied saying on Thor, they asked for a complete mini sequence 2 or 3 weeks before deadline. Some folks who talk to their managers or their people who send them out, they say, I request to not work on Marvel movies and TV shows. Unfortunately, they're becoming our biggest client. They expect a smorgasbord of options so they can change their minds 3 more times. And to be honest, one of the biggest moments of recognizing that, I don't know if you guys see in the notes where it says example, but there's an image there from the recent Thor film that is, it's kind of a still from one of the scenes, but the VFX is kind of a little bit all over the place. And mind you, if you're not somebody who really cares about any of this kind of stuff, or is watching the movie to kind of pinpoint certain things, yeah, you're probably not going to notice. But one of the things that people have pointed out with this particular image that I'm showing you guys right now, and we'll post this on the Instagram page, there are so many different levels of focus in this scene alone. What's supposed to be viewed in the foreground, what's supposed to be visible in the background, where do the goats fit into any of this?
Jiminy Crispers.
Yeah, and I didn't think much of it until I actually saw this image, and I'm like, this is bad. Because, I mean, you have to keep in mind, VFX artists, when they're doing this every frame by frame.
And if this is one of the frames, even for just the blink of that moment, these poor guys are taxed beyond all belief, because you can tell where the break is for real and not.
Yeah.
Like, it's really heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. And it's not something to say that every statement coming out of this whole conversation, because it's still very early on in this conversation, I don't know a lot of specifics. What I do know is that people are speaking up, and I don't know if that's the belief of every person on those effects creator teams, or maybe just a few disgruntled. I don't know if this is the truth, that Marvel treats their VFX creators like this, you know, earnestly, or if there is a slip in management. Not all the facts are out yet, but what I want to get your guys' thoughts and opinions on is, Spencer, had just mentioned they're dropping 4 new movies next year.
Yeah, I believe so. That's not counting the series that they're also doing next year.
That's right. They're still doing a few series. Knowing that this could be a possible reasoning as to how they're trying to get all these movies out for next year, does that change your perception of the Marvel movies and what they create as a product moving forward? Now, this is hypothetical. This isn't saying it's truth.
Right. Well, I feel like, this just goes back to the thing of, like, I don't fully understand what Marvel's doing. Like, even, like, before this story, putting out 4 movies in 1 year already seems kind of like madness. When we're still talking about, like, are people burned out on these movies? And I'm like, if you put out 4 per year, yeah, the answer's going to be yes. But once you get into, like, the VFX stuff, like, like, I feel like this is going to be like the first, like this is the first call that you're running into a problem, because when your art is not at the quality that like you can normally do because you're being asked to do it at a rapid pace.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be like the beginning of like a downfall in like quality that people are going to notice.
Yeah. What do you think, Ames? Same question in terms of your view, your visage of how you see Marvel movies, if this is hypothetically the way they are choosing to produce the movies as rapidly and the shows as rapidly as they are.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing that I have a problem with is that it is so rapid. Everything is so rapid. Yeah. They are pushing gourmet meals at a fast food pace. Which means the workers and the creators are slaving to a point that burnout is not only are they susceptible to burnout, but they are expecting it. It's the person that wrote in somewhere in the article that said that I've had three breakdowns so far, and it was never worth the credit. I like at the end of the movie, it really hit me. Understanding like the mouse push for go 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 will inevitably be their downfall. And if Feige doesn't take the steps to treat his team with respect, there will be nobody that will work for Marvel in reference to VFX. Because you are going to essentially murder the dreams of all of these artists. And it makes it really hard for me as a consumer to support something that, yes, I do love. But when they're treating people this way, I don't want it. I will, if it takes 2 years, 3 years for them to push out another movie, I will wait. I was getting kind of concerned about the Pixar guys when they were starting to do 2 movies a year. Yeah. I'm like, that's a lot for you guys too, and you're all computer work. And then when you couple with not just the movies but the TV shows and the expectations for the TV shows, they can't keep up. Yeah. There is no possible way that these guys can keep up. I applauded WandaVision on doing practical effects mm-hmm. for the first couple of episodes because it gave not only due to the people that were originally doing the practical effects. It was part of cinematic and TV history. But then also transitioning to VFX meant that those guys were still under pressure to get those pushed out, even on a weekly basis. So it's really hard for me to go, yes, Marvel, give me what I want. When I'm like, I can wait.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference in just the type of fan that I am versus, and I'm not saying that's bad to have different types of fans.
No.
But understanding the Stephen Colbert meme, give to me now. I'm past that because when the art comes out and it's great, I want every person on those teams getting the acknowledgement, the time off, the care and consideration and the praise that they are due for the work that they have done. And as of late, Marvel has been skirting around even acknowledging the creatives or the creators. I had brought it up prior. David Aja, who did the covers for Hawkeye, was never noted for the first couple of episodes, and they were literally ripping off his art. And Marvel, technically Disney's whole stance is, well, we bought the properties, so we can do whatever we want with the covers. But it's still his art, and you still need to acknowledge him. So, yeah, it's frustrating, and I am one small fish that is not swimming in that pond, but I am not happy about it.
Yeah, but that's also something that they need to be aware of, because like it starts off with a whole like small people are upset, but like it doesn't take much for like that to become a lot of people are upset for you. Ugh. Which is gonna hurt your bottom line, which is the thing you don't want to happen.
Very true.
I feel like, you know, they should really be in front of this thing and being like, oh, okay, well, like, yeah, maybe you guys have a point, we'll start crediting people like we should be and maybe not working people to death.
True, and here's the kicker of all this. It's kind of like the whole doxing situation when it comes to all these other celebrities and their abilities to try to be progressive, but then forget, oh, wait, but I did this one tweet or I did these series of tweets way back when, and someone dug around and found them. I feel like this is a very volatile time for Marvel and Disney to try to do their best to behave, because Disney right now has their feet still in the whole, you know, don't say gay bill thing going on in Florida. And then you have Marvel, who is now coming out with a lot of VFX artists who are saying that they're not being treated fairly, or they're not being, you know, recognized or things like that. If this blows up, in the possibility that it does, it's hard to say if it would even affect the like momentum that Disney and Marvel already have, but I would say it would hurt their box office numbers. Sure. If you have enough people who stand with other content creators, other individuals who are building and creating for, you know, for their livelihood, let's be frank. I have a few friends who do this for Pixar, and I know that if anything ever came up, that if their livelihood came into concern because of their work, I know that they would have no issue standing up and speaking out and then making every point necessary to make a change. And I feel like we're kind of at the groundwork of this, and Disney's at a place where they can fix it if they kind of get ahead of it. But to get ahead of it, they have to be honest about it. They have to be real about it. They have to be transparent about it. And you know what? Yeah, these guys are right. We didn't treat them well enough. We didn't pay attention to this. We weren't doing these things right. You know what? That's on us. We completely messed up. We need to re-overhaul our whole, you know, way we do this, and we may need to push back X, Y, and Z movies so that way we can make sure that we're giving ample and reasonable time for our creators to create, and for our, you know, people who've wrapped things up to give everybody enough time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, who knows? I don't know. It's still very early in this conversation. This article just debuted 2-3 days ago, and I did want to bring it here because I feel like when it comes to movies, yeah, there are certain movies where we can be like, okay, let's focus on the movie. The director might be a little quirky, or he might be a little loose screwed, kind of off in the head. Either that's Quentin Tarantino or whomever, maybe, like, or, you know, Michael Boom Boom Bay, you know, they may have a couple screws loose, but, you know, we have to look at the movie and what it speaks for. In elements like this, where the opportunity is not only to look at the movie itself, but to also look at how it came about for those creators, those people to be successful in this movie, and who they had to step on to get there. You know, I feel like those are just as valid conversation parts as much as Chris Hemsworth did this, Natalie Portman did that, Taika did these things, and blah, blah, blah. Because when you have a movie where the foundation of it is built on people who are mistreated, abused mentally, emotionally, maybe even physically, and put to work to the nth degree without even the most notable consideration of where they are now, how are they feeling, have they recovered? I mean, a lot of these people, they sound like they have PTSD after the situation, after everything going on. If you have a film, if you have films that are built on that, that doesn't make, in my personal opinion, that doesn't make that studio any better than any of the other, like, really scummy type businesses who build off of the backs of people who do the true work. Well, you know, we're here in California, and one of the biggest things that we have in California is agriculture. And if, I mean, and mind you, this is not a direct comparison. I'm not saying, you know, oh, this equals that, but I'm saying there are a slew of farms that pay pennies on the dollar for migrant workers to pick their vegetables. And then on top of that, they treat them horribly. And I say this from a Latin perspective. I'm not saying it because, you know, I speak for any other culture who may have gone through something similar. I know there's other cultures, there's other people, obvious ones that have gone through similar, but I'm just talking about what I can say and speak towards. But when you have situations where people are taking advantage of people like that, and then they take those goods and they sell them for much, much more because they're organic, they're fresh, they're right from the farm, they're these things, and they pay those people pennies on the dollar for a day's worth of work in the sun, that for me calls into question the practices of that farmer, the practices of that, you know, landowner. And to be quite frank, it calls into question the legality of if they can do that or not. That, if what they're saying is true, and if everything that everybody is speaking out about is, has any sense of truth to it at all, that puts Disney and Marvel in the same arena as that farmer.
Very true.
And that's something that, if it is true, will not go unheard, and it will not go unnoticed if people speak up. So, but wrapping this whole thing up, I know I kind of brought it down for a second there, but still, I did want to ask you guys to kind of bring the conversation back up a bit. Quick roundtable question. We usually do these roundtable questions. This is for the table. What do you think was Jane's last catchphrase whispered to Thor? So in the last scene, spoiler, like we said, blah, blah, blah. As Jane is passing because of the cancer and everything going on, she does tell Thor, "I think I figured out my catchphrase." And then she whispers to Thor, and then shortly thereafter, she passes. But we don't know for certain what that catchphrase was.
And Natalie Portman says she's never telling.
Did she?
Yeah.
Someone asked her. Are you for real?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Said she's never going to tell.
Well,
I can appreciate it. It is the Pam and Jim note in the teapot.
No, Pam said, the woman, what's her name, did actually reveal what it said in the...
Oh, Jenna did?
Yeah, on their podcast. Natalie Portman, take notes.
Yeah, but like how many years after the fact?
How many years later, exactly.
We're going to be waiting to like 2030.
We'll be like, hey, girl, you remember? I've got some ideas.
Okay, so I want to know what your guys' ideas are. Let's keep it to two, Amy. Spencer's like, I ain't got one.
Yeah, I know.
So, all right. Let's start with Amy, since she's got the plethora over here of catchphrases.
Yeah. Well, so on the comic book technicality, there is a joke in Mighty Thor. I think it's the third volume, somewhere in there, where the catchphrase is something like, "You want to eat my hammer, lady? Then take a big bite." It's super weird. It's super like, okay. And it kind of makes you chuckle because they're both chuckling at her thing. So it kind of works with that mentality. Personally, I really hoped she just whispered, "Hammer time."
Dang it. I was going to say that as my bad one.
But that's what I got.
All right. Spencer.
Well, I got nothing now.
Come on.
I had a bad one and she took it.
It's hammer time.
I have no idea. Because, like, I was actually, like, when she was talking about it, I was like, man, I'm glad I don't have to think about this. Because, like, catchphrases would not be my thing. I'd have such terrible catchphrases as a superhero.
And Spencer's would be, "Did you turn it off and on again?" Spencer works in IT, so
yeah.
We're like, "Why are you calling me? Stop."
We're waiting.
Oh, no, the end. That's the end of my comment.
You can't just
throw this on me. This needs to be like, you need to give me several hours.
Hours?
Yes.
You got 3 minutes. I'm going to go ahead and do my...
That's not enough time.
So. Well, that's hours in podcast time.
Yeah, that's not real, though.
It's very real. Excuse me. Okay, so I have two.
Give Spencer time to think. Come on.
Yeah, are you thinking?
Yeah.
You sure? That was like, I gotta poop.
Okay, what are your two?
So, my two. So, my first one is just, it's not as articulate as yours. The Hammer Time one, I thought it was, it was actually good.
It would go with that whole 80s vibe.
So, I would say the first one would be, I don't know, she would scream out like, be my nail, and then boom, drop the hammer.
Drop the hammer would have worked as a concept too.
She's whispering
this to Thor.
Yeah, well, yeah, she would say, be my nail, and then I feel like my wish list one is a callback to a wonderful musical, and I would hope she whispered to him, the hammer is not my penis.
No. Oh no.
Call back to Dr. Horrible.
He's affiliate. Really? 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 Really?
Yeah, really. I like that one. Spencer.
That's not 3 minutes.
That was a 30 seconds. It's close enough.
No, it's not. I got nothing for you.
Give me one. Come on.
One of nothing.
Yeah.
Like, you know that this is not my strong suit. Wordsmithing is not my thing.
Wordsmithing. Okay. If I were... I don't even know where to begin. Amy's got one. Okay.
Nailed it.
Like, speaking of failing streaming
series.
Yeah,
it was a terrible... No, like, she just enough. She goes, I got a good one. Like, it's so, that's literally, I'm getting shaking heads and the, like,
no, I'll tell you what, we'll call that Spencer's. Okay. Spencer's nailed it. getting vibes from that In Living Colors. All right. Wrapping up this conversation, let's go ahead and go around the table. And mind you, we're going to talk about whether or not this film passes or fails. In lieu of the controversy that's going on, I don't want that to mar our thoughts for this particular film, as we can't substantiate whether or not there's truth behind that, but it is to keep something in mind as pertaining to moving forward with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I want us to just keep our reviews and our thoughts based on the actual thought of the film itself outside of the controversy. So starting with Spencer...
This movie passes for me. It is a great entry into the Thor franchise. Mm-hmm. Still think Thor Ragnarok's a bit of a better movie, but that's still not to say you shouldn't see this one. Great acting, great story, screaming goats that just keep coming back up for some reason when you think they should be done. But yeah, I think I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5.
There you go. What about you, Amy?
Much like Spencer, this movie passes for me. I actually kind of agree. Ragnarok is such a fun first entry. The second entry seems wonderful to partner up. Much like the... I was going to say something about the Screaming Goats, and you beat me to it, so I love this. Taika does a great job leading his team to a hard-earned victory as far as emotional growth and character growth. Let's hold hands over a lava pit, somebody, and make a baby Korg. This is 4 out of 5 for me.
I don't think Korg was the name of their species, but I get what you're saying.
I can't say what their name. All I know is the Ninny. What did the Ninny Nani know? Was their god? He was the
Ninny Nani.
He sits on a throne of scissors and
because
rocks.
Rock beat scissors.
It was so cute.
All right. In terms of my thoughts, the film passes for me. It does have a great script for it. It does have incredible dialogue and incredible story elements that create this wonderful journey with Thor and his cohorts. I loved everything about this movie in terms of the story element and a lot of the scenes that really caught me off guard emotionally, especially when it came to the kids. Really enjoyed a lot of those scenes. Overall, I think this film is a good film. I have to agree with both Amy and Spencer. I do think Ragnarok brings a whole different element to the Thor franchise. This feels like a continuation of that, which isn't a bad thing. It doesn't really change the volume if I were to give it a descriptor, of the movie, of what Taika brings to us, it's still at that same level, which is greatness. You know, it doesn't bring anything new, but it does bring something fun to the table. So I'm going to give it a... what did you give it, Spence?
4.
What did you give it?
4.
I'll give it a 3.8.
reluctancy. My name is Eddie.
This movie was fun, and if you are looking for a great time in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, this is a movie you're going to want to check out. It is in your local theaters at this time, so go to your local theater, check it out, sit in a seat, eat some popcorn, watch the movie. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight at the table. This was a great conversation, and we want to remind you that the giveaway is still going on. We are getting several entries in by the day, so if you haven't had a chance, check it out. Go over to our Instagram page. We have the information on how to enter over there. And of course, if you want to check us out on the podcast streaming apps, you can go over to iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn. You can tune in to each and every one of those places. Check us out. Give us a follow. Give us a listen. Give us a subscribe. Also, if you feel gracious enough, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it. You can also check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. We got over 300 episodes allegedly over at that website, where you can check out everything from anime, romance, action. We got movies pertaining to Marvel. We got movies pertaining to DC. We got movies for everybody. We have conversations for anybody looking for a conversation about movies. We got you covered. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. Also, you can check us out on the socials over at facebook.com/filmlosophers, and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. That is filmlosophy101 on Instagram and Twitter. There you can find, again, that link to our giveaway, as well as a bunch of other cool stuff. Amy, where can people find you for Jane Unseen?
The only place that I've ever lived, considering that name, is for Instagram, and it's Jane Unseen. I still don't have clips, sir, to place upon Instagram. Yes. So that's where you can find it.
When you bring coffee, I'll bring you clips.
I make coffee. I make coffee.
So that about wraps up another awesome episode. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
Class dismissed.